My name is Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. God damn. I've been married to this woman for 20 years, and she'd lost her sense of humor a long time before. And we had these five urchins, all of them thankless and petty. The oldest was 17 and the youngest was 7. And the oldest daughter was in a sick relationship with some lunatic. And, he was the hashish salesman working his way through high school. You should have seen him with the head going all the time. Called his mother, man. Hey, man, what's for dinner? And he loved LSD. They're the worst kind, aren't they? I'd be right in the middle of a sentence. He said, "What was that?" Of course, the shape I was in, I said, "I don't know. What was that? Where? What?" My drunken mother-in-law lived with us, and she'd explain it. And we were all crazy. Some of the big experts in the field of alcoholism say that every alcoholic, drinking alcoholics, destroys 7 lives, at least. And we had 5 kids. So we were right on the median. And I'm going to be teary tonight. My nose has been running all day. God damn. I've got to get some salt tablets. But it was too late. You know, this family, it was over. No human power could have relieved my family. No human power. And Dave's the guy who got me in AA. He said he was 16 years old and we surfed a lot together, and that was about the only time we got along, you know. And a few weeks earlier, I had threatened to move out, and everybody said, "Yeah, go for it, Dad." And so I did. You know, I'm going to run any bluff. I moved out. And I'm living down at the beach where I wanted to live anyway. And things didn't go well. I had said for years, if I'd unload that witch and those long-haired dopey children, I'd be all right. And I wasn't all right. I was drinking more than I ever had. I was missing work, which I had never, ever done. And I went by the house one afternoon and was haranguing my wife, I guess, about money. And Dave was kind of bobbing in the background there, humming a tune from the planet Pluto. And I did something very stupid. I turned to him and I said, "Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house?" And a 16-year-old kid looked me right in the eye. And he said, "It's beautiful." He had more reason to be afraid of me physically than any of the other kids. I was much harder on him physically than any of the other kids. I hit them all, but it was in the courage it took. And I got in the car and left. And on the way home, I said, "That woman has turned my children against me." And I got back around to the beach. And I went out and sat on the screen porch and watched what is still today the most beautiful sunset that I've ever seen in my life. It was magenta. You ever seen a magenta sunset on the ocean? White sand. And I surrendered. What I realized was I'd given up my own self-worth a long time before that. The fact that David had lost his respect for me just brought it up. And so I went in the bedroom and dug out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd read it in one of my travels through the program. I'd been a 5-year loser, and I read the big book for 3 days and 3 nights, and I didn't go to work. I called in sick. I ate a little bit, slept a little bit, read the big book, cover to cover, all the stories. The professor in the paradox was especially appealing to me. But on the third night, 3 o'clock in the morning, 13th of January, 1970, I was on page 63 again. And I knelt down and read it out loud. I read the third step out loud to myself. And same thing happened to me to the other speakers you've heard. It's over. And for 32 years, I tried to tell you what that happened to me that morning. And when I was 32 years sober, there was a little gal who wrote an article in the Grapevine. And she was in a drying out joint. She was 15 years old. And she was 17 years old. And she did exactly what I had done 32 years before. She was on page 63. She said, I was engulfed by a great laughing love. I was engulfed by a great laughing love. That'll do it for me, That'll do it for me. And so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to quit drinking. You had never impressed me. In the 5 years I was in and out, you never impressed me. I have an extremely high IQ. And I am extremely sensitive. And you clods, with your Mickey Mouse book. I remember the third night I tried to lay a little Nietzsche on him, And this one moron said, well, we keep it simple here. No shit. You could have fooled me, Leroy, And so I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous to quit drinking. And I made a terrible mistake right on. There was a guy named Bill Blake in our area that every time I'd come in and out of AA, he was one of those guys that pounces on you and tries to help you. That when you're a slipper, you don't want help. You want to get the hell out of there. But he was always saying idiotic things to me like, you want to go to Los Angeles with us tomorrow night? No, What I wanted to say, I can't stand you jerks here. Well, I would drive 100 miles to meet some more of you, But I just say, no, thank you, But he never failed. He lived in my neighborhood. He'd catch me on Saturday morning, sick as hell. He'd drive by. How you doing, Cliff? But wasn't it funny? That night I went to his house. That very night, the 13th of January, 1970, and knocked on the door. His wife opened the door, Margie, and was glad to see me. Can you imagine? A 5-year, smart-ass, overeducated jerk loser. She was glad. And he came home, said, Cliff, about a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything to do to help you folks out? I'll do what I can. But I want to tell you, that's the last nice thing the man ever said to me. As long as he lived. And so I had unknowingly, I thought I just came to a place where we all stopped drinking. That was enough. I was tired of drinking. I didn't know I came into a community. I know some people call it a fellowship. That's kind of gender. Sarcastic to me. It's a community. AA is a community. And then, of course, I love Bob, but I'm reading down, you're doing steps 8, 9, and it gets to the bottom and it says, Cliff will talk about the state, what is it? The state of unity. I thought, you son of a... State of unity. Everybody else gets a step. I get the state of unity. What I was going to do, I first thought, I said, I'll tell him I read it wrong, and I'm going to talk about the state of Utah. That'd fix his ass, wouldn't it? Yeah. But he always does this to me. He does it every time. But he tells me he loves me. But I was here in a community, and I imagine you were like this too. I was the kind of person that doesn't fit into a community. You know, I'm hooray for me and screw everybody else. I'm me, Cliff. He's the only one that's important. And I'm here in this community. So something had to be done with me. And so, Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted to start with this. Alcoholics Anonymous is not very old. You know, I look around this room, it looks like the biggest room in the world. And this audience is, we're all kind of cocksure, aren't we? You know, we're AA. Look at this. My God. We're successful. You know, I've been sober. I'm only 43 years sober. And I've been sober longer than half the time there's been an Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was 12 years old, I delivered the Saturday Evening Post with the article that, you know, and nobody's ever called and thanked me for that either, by the way. I read that article. And I thought, oh, I hope my mom finds it. I hope my mom. My mother died on Skid Row in Los Angeles. 3 blocks from the Cecil Hotel. That was the first meeting in Southern California. 3 blocks. When I was new, I got to meet the original members of Alcoholics Anonymous in Southern California. Sybil Corwin, the oldest sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, woman, loved me, cuddled me. Also, that's cute. And Cliff Walker, who was the first delegate, panel one. And Mort Joseph, who led the first meeting in Los Angeles. And he didn't know what to do. So he said, I didn't seem to have any direction at the time. So I said, why don't we read part of this chapter 5? It's read in 170 languages. And he said, I didn't seem to have any direction at the time. I love that. So a lot of those guys were in a Monday night stand. I'll get going here pretty soon if I don't fall over dead, for Christ's sake. No, this weekend has been really, really emotional for me because I love everybody who talked. And anyway, gee, I'm getting better. There were a lot of those guys went to this Monday night men's stag meeting in Laguna Beach. And my sponsor took me there. And they were very hard on me. You know, I was a whiner. Any of you whiners? And they just tear me to shreds. They had no mercy whatsoever. So we were going home, going down the old 101. And I said to Bill, those guys did not realize that I'm sensitive. I said it 3 times. And he said, quietly, you are not sensitive. You are an immature son of a bitch. No, I kind of preferred sensitive. But I went to bed that night, and I did not sleep that night. I did not sleep. And about 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning, I got up, made a cup of coffee, sat on my back porch, watched the sunrise, and I surrendered to the idea that I'm not sensitive. I've never been sensitive. I'm completely oblivious of how you feel. But you mustn't hurt my feelings. That's what I thought sensitivity was. You know? And I said, okay, that's what's wrong with me. That's why I'm not fitting in. And 3 nights later, he took me up to Costa Mesa to hear his sponsor, Clancy. And that night, Clancy, I've never heard him give the talk since. Bill had been talking about me, the intellectual giant. And Clancy that night talked about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, how dumb and stupid and childish they are. And he is a high IQ. And he talked about for 10 years he stayed drunk. And he took each step and made fun of it. Oh, I almost peed myself. I laughed so hard. Each step. It was so riot. But about halfway through, I said, you're immature. And that's the answer. 1 through 12. And so I did the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, led by my sponsor. And I did them well. I did them by, as the book says to do them. I got to step 12 in about 4 months. I didn't grow up for another 6 years. But I had a spiritual awakening when I got to the 12th step. I had a spiritual awakening. Not a religious awakening. A spiritual awakening. I think the great historian Thomas Cahill said, if God had put Prozac in the water, there wouldn't be any religions. That ought to piss a few off. And so I started becoming a member Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the community of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a community, huh? Starts a very small level, you know, a group, and then there's the intergroup, and then there's the area assembly, and then there's the conference, and then there's 170 countries, almost 3 million people. That's a pretty good community. And I have no fears about the community, but I'm supposed to talk about the community tonight. I found that in the community there has to be some kind of guidelines. I don't know what you were like. I never liked a law, and I never liked a rule. I thought they were made to be broken. I don't like to be told what to do. But when you have 3 million people going in the same direction, you ought to have some guidelines. And we call them the traditions. The first tradition in the long form really got me. It said, AA comes first. First. But Cliff, you're soon after. Doesn't sound good to me. But it certainly has worked in my life. And the traditions have guided Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, every tradition, if this group is so hip, I feel like I'm talking down to you, and I don't want to do that. But the traditions are a record of our failures as a community. You know, our forefathers almost screwed this thing up completely. Blowing their anonymity and getting involved with money, property, and prestige, and on and on and on and on. So when you read, you say, oh, yeah, that's how they screwed that one up. And Bill had a hell of a time getting to accept the traditions. Most of the people I know in L.A., they said, we'd love to have you come out and talk, Bill. Don't talk about those damn traditions. It took him like 4 or 5 years to get them adopted. But they have guided us pretty well, I think. I think the community works really well. Those early people that I met, Sybil and those guys, I'm so grateful that I knew them, because they had that sureness about Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't sweat things. Sybil gave a talk on the traditions one time that was, it was so beautiful. And she said, we follow the traditions because we love each other. There are no rules here. Now, wouldn't it be great if people, you know, come up to a stop sign? You know, what do we usually say? Is there a cop around? What if we came to a stop sign and we say, I'm a member of the human race and I love them, so I don't hurt anybody? Wouldn't that be great if everybody in the world did that? But we follow the traditions because we love each other. and we don't want to hurt each other, and we certainly don't want to hurt AA. So it's love-based, and I don't see how you can miss with that. But the traditions are a record of our failure. One of the other speakers said that. We're all in this big, beautiful room tonight because we failed. We're losers. And by the gift of a loving higher power, we get to live a pretty good life. I get to live a great life. This is what I get to live. It's a spiritual way of life, and after you feel the Spirit, then you know where you're going. We had a lot of big troubles and fears in the early days to lose our way. I remember reading about there were 12 people sober in New York. 12 people sitting in a church basement. Nobody ever tried this before, you know. And then they wrote about one guy went out and got drunk. And it just broke their hearts. It just broke their hearts. You know, nowadays, 3 million sober people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody goes out there and dies. Who cares? As long as it's me. You know, as long as it's not me. And so the community has grown and grown and grown. And we've had lots of arguments, but we've weathered them all. I like the, well, this weekend, huh? I was sitting over there the other night, I looked around the room, and I said, I'll bet you everybody in this room, when they got up this morning, when they woke up, did not think about alcohol. Do you realize the miracle that that is? There's 1,000 people here. I don't know about you, but for 20 years, that's the first thing that was in my mind in the morning. Usually it was, oh God, what did I do? Or it was, I'm not going to drink today. You know, or where can I get some today? You know, and I haven't awakened in the morning and I can't remember how I ended. And don't even think about alcohol. And that it just blows my mind when I think about it. But anyway, there we're sailing along, all fuzzy. And then we find out that we own 2 corporations. What happened to the community? We own 2 corporations. General Service Office of AA in New York and the Grapevine Corporation. And the Grapevine is owned by the trustees of Alcoholics Anonymous. 7 of them are non-alcoholics. 14 of them are alcoholics. And they call the non-alcoholics the Class A trustees, and they call us the Class B trustees. And a lot of the roiling in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of the anger that comes in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of the struggle that comes in Alcoholics Anonymous that interferes with our community is this stress between the legal owners of the 2 corporations of Alcoholics Anonymous and the spiritual community. And we call them the board. Or the board of trustees. Or the trustees. Or those sons of bitches in New York. I was the delegate. In our community, you know, we have an intergroup and we have representatives that go and make the decisions for our own particular town that we're in. I was the first intergroup chairman in North San Diego County, and we had 91 groups. And we had an intergroup rep every month from about 55 of the groups. A little more than half. But within a year, maybe 30 So I wrote this scathing letter and sent it out, and then we got back up to 45 or 50. Today, in North San Diego County, there are 650 groups. The average attendance at the intergroup meeting is 33. 33. And it's that way, as far as I can tell, around most of the country. And then when you get that thing every year right after the conference and read about how much each member spends in each state per year for AA, you know, $4.50 a year, we're still here. If GSO disappeared tomorrow, if it just disappeared from the face of the earth, if every intergroup disappeared, if every area assembly disappeared, we're all right. You know, the traditions tell us. The traditions have two basic tenets, and the first and most important one was, it's one drunk talking to another. And when I said that, everybody in this room thought of a person who gave you AA in the front seat of a car on the way to a meeting. Nothing must stand in the way of one drunk talking to another. That's all we have. That's all we need to have. The greatest cure for alcoholism in the history of the world. More people sober than all the treatment centers and all the hospitals and all the do-good societies that ever were. There are more people sober in Alcoholics Anonymous because it's one drunk talking to another. And the second underlying principle that underlies the traditions that has kept us together is a guy wrote a book that I love. It's the history of AA. He called the book Not God. Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z. He started out as a doctorate paper and developed into a magnificent book. He wasn't in AA when he wrote the book. He joined later. And I met him, and he's a marvelous man. But this book talks about the history of AA, and that's why he named the book Not God. Because those old-timers, Bill and Bob and those other guys, they knew if there's anybody in the world, it's not God, it's us. And so we don't make a lot of big decisions about other things. We don't just stomp on other people's rights and believe we're right. All we do, but it's harmless, you know. We don't do it on purpose. When I was at the first conference, was in 76 that I attended. I was a delegate. And that was one of those years when the board of trustees and the delegates, and in the conference, there's the board of trustees and several members of AA who are the executives in the General Service Office and in the Grapevine office. But at the conference, two-thirds of the members are delegates. Now, I taught parliamentary law. And if you have two-thirds, you win. And that year, they wanted to have meetings that were gay people, would name the meeting a gay meeting. And almost all the delegates when we got there were very much opposed to it, a bunch of homophobics if there ever were one. But as we ironed and talked and thought it out and heard all the arguments, we voted, of course, for that. They had raised the price of the big book to like $7.50. And we were insane with anger. And it was blood on the floor. I loved it, you know. And we voted it back down to $5. We promised we'd try to send more money in from the groups, but it was going to be $5. And they had nothing to say about it. And they'd been selling the book, Bill W. was published by Harcourt and Bruce, and they were selling it out of the office. And we said, no, you're not going to do that. That was the big fight. And they finally said, well, what are we going to do with the books? I'll tell you what they're doing. And it was a real struggle. But I see, or I learned at that particular conference, that we're in charge. We really are. You know, they said, they read at the beginning of the meeting, we're in charge of our own lives. A loving God expresses himself in our group conscience. And every group that meets everywhere has a group conscience, you know. I don't care if it's the area assembly or the intergroup meeting or my home group. Now this one, Bob's the higher power. But I accept that. I accept that. And so most of the conflict since I've been sober with our, community, with our community, has been this yin and yang between the legal part of Alcoholics Anonymous and the traditional part. Now, I've known 7 or 8 of the Class A trustee people. They're usually a banker or a psychiatrist or, they're of help at that level. And every one of them that I've known loves AA and really feels like they're not alcoholics, but they've done the steps, all of them. They want the best for this program. There are no enemies here. But they piss us off, you know, because they take too much on themselves, and we're not ready for that yet. So that's when most of the troubles have been. In the last number of years, there have been some problems at AA, and we usually work them out. You know what's the biggest problem in AA? It threatens our community. Self-obsession. The same problem we brought here. You know, I want it my way and I want it yesterday. And I'm God. And we're going to do it my way. At the conference, even on that horrible conference where we were just at each other's throat, they're guided by the concepts. A lot of people don't read the concepts. A lot of people don't care about the concepts. But they are absolutely important because they, 6 of them, break down this relationship between the traditional and the legal. Really breaks it down so it's understandable. Now, the long form of the traditions is the greatest cure for insomnia in the history of the world. I mean, 2 concepts, you're gone. But the concepts are, you know, in between our community and our legal entity, they're absolutely important. But the other concepts talk about all the freedoms we have here, too. We have the right to be defended. We have the right to have an opinion. If you give us a job in AA, we have the right to do the job our way. Lots of things in the concept that people don't think about. But basically, they're there to guide us as best they can. And the concept says, nothing should be done in AA without a discussion, vote, and they have something called substantial unanimity. Now I say, I taught parliamentary law. I never saw that. What it means, I really don't know what it means. It says, damn near everybody. And at that conference, you know, there'd be like 2 people were still opposed. And they'd get up again and again and again. And we had 3/4 of the vote by then. You know, parliamentary law says, sit down and shut up. We got them, you know. And they let them. It drove me crazy. But sometimes at our intergroup level, and sometimes at the area assembly level, and too many times at the group level, we want to play God. One more than half, you shut up. We have the majority. And that'll kill us. It really will kill us. We're not God. And so that substantial unanimity, we're going to have some long meetings, but I think it's worth it. I really do. I really think it's worth it. I was given the job of talking about how we're going to make it, the problems we have. But I'm not worried, are you? What we have, I talked at Akron one year. That was incredible. My sober daughter was there with me. And, we went to the hotel where Bill made the phone call. We went out to Dr. Bob's grave. And then the next year, my wife and I went back east, and we stood at Bill and Lois's grave. And right after I'd done that Akron gig, I got home and I was reading the morning meditation book. And this guy was talking about the bonding we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think it's beyond anything I've ever seen in the world, this bonding we have. I mean, I bond with Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and Cliff and Mort and that old sponsor of mine. Been dead for 22 years, and I miss him every day. And I bond with people all over the world. And this guy in the morning meditation, he says, we bond with everyone who went before us and babies yet unborn. Now, that's why I admire this roundup. This roundup talks about how we can ensure that this way of life will pass on to people that aren't born yet. I have 3 grandchildren and I'm waiting on, But 100 years from now, there'll be some young guy who kneels down and reads the 3rd step prayer out loud and comes to AA and joins. I think the community will be here. I know it will be, because we love it too much to lose it. And so like my handsome baby that I sponsor, I was taught in AA, when you're finished, shut up and sit down.